Parshas Baaloscha has many, many events. It seems a little bit of a potpourri of a little bit of this and a little bit of that. The Rav Zichron Livracha was quoted as having said that when he hears the Kriya Satorah of Parshas Baaloscha, he feels like a bee drinking a little bit of nectar from different flowers. Just to go through quickly with the events that take place, and then we'll zero in on a few. The parasha begins with the discussion of the menorah and the Mishkan, then moves to the Kedushas HaLevim, consecrating the Levim as being part of those who are going to work in the Mishkan. The parasha then moves to the issue of Pesach Sheni, those who were unable to bring the original Korban Pesach on Pesach. They were Tameh, they were too distant, so they come to Moshe, and almost because of them, we learn the parasha of Pesach Sheni. Lama Nigara, they were bothered. How can it be that we can't bring the Pesach Sheni? And therefore, they complained to Moshe, and eventually were given a second opportunity. Then it discusses how Bnei Yisrael traveled through the Midbar with the Amud Eish, with the Ananim, the fire, and the crowds surrounding them. How they blew the Chatzotot, the different trumpets. Then the Parsha of Yisro being invited back. He had left Bnei Yisrael and Moshe inviting him to come back. And then there's the upside down nuns making a break right before Parakeet Aleph for the two psukim of Vayhi ben Soa Haaron are sectioned off with these upside down nuns, which also seems to be an important discussion, not one for today, but also something very interesting. And then we move to the complaints of Bnei Yisrael. They complain one time, and they're punished by Hashem. The next pasuk after they're punished by Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu davens, they stop. The next pasuk after that, they're complaining again. They're complaining about the man, that they didn't like the food that they had, remembering what it was like in Mitzrayim. Then Moshe Rabbeinu basically gives up on them. He tells Hashem, I don't need this anymore. Well, what are you expecting from me? Then Hashem points the Canaan, the elders, to be responsible. And then there's the parasha of Eldad and Medad, the two people who were continuing to say Nevuah afterwards. Then Hashem sends the Slav, the quail for the people. Then we discuss the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu separating from his wife, Miriam speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, and finally Moshe Rabbeinu davening for Miriam. A lot of things happening in this week's parasha. Let's try to focus our discussion a little bit. As we all know, there are five books to the Torah. But the Gemara tells us that, in fact, there are seven books to the Torah, not five books of the Torah. How are the seven books of the Torah? So the Gemara says that within Sefer Bamidbar, there are actually three separate books. We have from Parshas Bamidbar until Perek Yud Pasuk Lamed Hey, until the first upside down Nun of Vayehi ben Soa Haaron. That counts as an entire Sefer unto itself. The next two Psukim of Vayehi ben Soa Haaron are also counted as a completely separate Sefer. And then from the beginning of Parakeet Aleph through the end of Sefer Bamidbar, we have a third Sefer. So what's the significance of all of these Svarim? So the significance of the middle section, other than being a transition, we're not really going to discuss for today. But in terms of what we saw at the beginning, what we spoke about on Parshas Bamidbar a little bit, and Parshas Naso, more in Parshas Bamidbar, was that there was a certain ideal which we saw in the way Bnei Yisrael were encamped in the Midbar, that they were all surrounding the Mishkan, and the Torah and the Mishkan were at the center, and it seemed like everything was perfect. They were living within the Anonim, they had this Machana, they had this camp, and everything was fine. And as we get to the point of Vayehi ben Soa Haaron, as we get to the end of the parsha, we're on the verge of entering into Eretz Yisrael. In fact, the last two psukim discussed how Hashem wanted to bring them into Eretz Yisrael so quickly that they traveled the amount that would normally take 3 days in one day. Hashem made it that they would get there even faster because He was ready to take them into Eretz Yisrael. Then we have this break of Vayehi ben Soa Haaron, and then comes the beginning of the Misonanim, those who were complaining against Hashem. And from the beginning of the Misonanim through the end of Sefer Bamidbar, we have problem after problem after problem, incident after incident, rebellion. We have Korach, we have the Meraglim, we have the sin with Midian. so many problems, and the almost pristine life that seemed to have existed in the first half of the Sefer prior to Vayhi ben Aharon somehow disappeared completely. There was a complete transition, and now everything was on the decline. We need to try and understand what happened. What is it that transformed the Bnei Yisrael, and why is it that suddenly there was this downturn? There's a story related that there was a chassid who came to his rebbe, to the Ger Rebbe, to the Chedushei Harim, and he looked all depressed. And the rebbe asked, what was troubling him? What was so bothersome? And he said, it's the summer, and the summer was what was getting down. So the rebbe said, the heat, I know it's very difficult in the heat, but you know, I'm sure you can get past it. He said, no, it has nothing to do with the heat. So the rebbe said, so what is it? So he said, it's the parshios. He said, parsha after parsha after parsha in the summer, in the Yisrael, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. There's a chait, there's a rebellion, everything is just downhill. And if this generation in the Midbar, the Dordeya, the ones who had seen the Nisim and Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, received the Torah, they were eating the man almost directly from Hashem, if they couldn't do it, then how do I have a chance? How can I survive? So that's what we want to try and examine today. What exactly was it that took place? What happened? And how was this major shift between the first Sefer of Bamidbar, where everybody was encamped and everything seemed so perfect, and they were ready to enter into Eretz Yisrael, and suddenly there was this decline, and now the majority of the parshios of Bamidbar are in fact extremely negative. So let's start with the beginning of the complaints in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph. The Torah says, "Vayihi ha'am kimisonanim ra be'oznei Hashem." The people were seeking complaints. Vayishma Hashem, vayichar apo, vativar bam eish Hashem, atochal b'kseh amachan. And immediately, the response of Hashem was Hashem sends this fire to the edge of the camp, and it begins to consume the camp. The Torah doesn't tell us what were they complaining about. It doesn't say anything. It just says they were complaining. And this complaint clearly was something very, very bothersome, because immediately Hashem responded, and Hashem sent this fire right away. The next pasuk says, "Va'yisak ha'am el Moshe." So the people, they yelled to Moshe, they complained to Moshe. "Va'yispala Moshe l'Hashem atishka esh." Moshe davens, and the fire ceased. Then, "Va'yikra Hashem ha'akom ahu tavera ki va'ar avam esh Hashem." They named the place after this event that took place. The next pasuk, "Va'asafsuf Hashem v'kirbo hisavu ta'aba." The Asaf Suf, the rabble that was among the people, they had a craving, and everybody else joined in, and they started complaining, who is going to feed us? Who's going to give us meat? And they started reminiscing, we had the perfect life, it was so good in Mitzrayim. We ate this fish, they gave it to us for free, it's a kishuim, it's a batichim, it's a chatsir, it's a betzolim, it's a shumim, different fruits, vegetables, onions, garlic, whatever exactly all these things are. Everything was there, and now all we have is this man. Then the Torah continues in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Moshe Rabbeinu responds, something about what took place, something about this complaint was so bothersome to Moshe that Moshe says, why did you put me into this? Why do I have this responsibility? Why have you done evil to me by making me the leader of Bnei Yisrael? I didn't give birth to them, I'm not their parent, I'm not responsible for them. That I should carry them the same way a mother carries the nursing baby. So what's going on here? What were they complaining about? Why was it that Hashem's response was so harsh? And somehow that response didn't register. Whatever Hashem did, it wasn't enough. One pasuk later, hitzavu tava, and they complained for the basa, they complained for the meat again. And why was it that this complaint was so difficult that now Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't deal with them anymore? The chayta ega, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to daven for them. He didn't give up. He didn't say, Hashem, why did you put me into this position? What was it about what happened right now that caused this response from Moshe Rabbeinu? So we just turn back to the first pasuk again in Perek Yud Aleph. So what does the word misonanim mean? And what does it mean, Rabba Ozne Hashem, in the ears of Hashem? What was it that Hashem heard that was so terrible? So Rashi says, they were looking for an excuse. They were looking for something in order to separate from Hashem. And that's what the kimisonim. It's as if, it wasn't real complaints. They were looking for a reason to complain. They were looking for a reason to separate themselves from Hashem. And Rabba Ozne Hashem, says Rashi, they wanted Hashem to hear the complaint. The Medrash says it even more explicitly. The Medrash says, they wanted Hashem to hear their complaint. Rabbi Shimon used to say, what's this similar to? Somebody was cursing the king. Hayu HaMelech over, the king was passing by, Omerlo, so his friend says to him, Shtok, be quiet, Shlo Yishma HaMelech. You have to be quiet so the king doesn't hear you. Omer Lohem, and he responds, Mi Omer Lohem, Shlo Haysa Kavanasi, Kiyim LaHashmiyo. My whole point, my whole intention was that the king should hear what I'm saying. I'm not going to be quiet. The whole reason that I'm complaining, the whole reason that I'm cursing at the king, is so that he would hear what I'm saying. Ach Yisrael, Miskavnim LaHashmiyo LaMakom. So too, B'nai Yisrael wanted that Hashem would hear their complaints. And just, it seems very, very difficult. What was it suddenly that B'nai Yisrael were looking for an excuse to separate themselves from Hashem? They seemed to have had everything going for them. Why suddenly did they want to separate from Hashem? And then after Moshe davens to, you know, alleviate the destruction, to stop this fire that Hashem sent. So just to take a step back, assuming that that's the case, what Rashi is saying, that their whole intention was basically to rebel against Hashem. So then the immediate punishment from Hashem, of Aishma Hashem, so that makes sense now. This wasn't just an aver; they didn't succumb to some sort of Yetzer Hara, but they were looking for a reason to rebel. They were looking for something, and the Torah doesn't even say what it was. At this point, we don't even know what they were saying. But they were looking for something. They were looking for some sort of excuse in order to rebel against Hashem. So Hashem responds harshly to them. Moshe Rabbeinu stops it, and then again they still haven't learned their lesson. What does it mean, vayashuvu, and they returned vayivku b'nei Yisrael? So the Sforno says, the Rabban echoes this as well, the Sforno says, chazru lios kimisonim lanasus. They went back to being misonim in order for the purpose of testing Hashem. They wanted to challenge Hashem. Now they elaborated on even more on the fact that they left Mitzrayim. Why did they need to take them out of Mitzrayim? Kimusim malos seyos hashchina beinem kasherhid b'amru yanki ma'asem as Hashem asher bekir b'chem. They were trying to reject the fact that Hashem was amongst them, and the Ramban says the same thing. That's why it says vayashuvu vayitku. The reason the Torah says vayashuvu, that they returned to cry about it, is because it's the exact same thing. They, even though they had this response from Hashem, they had experienced this Eish Hashem, they returned to going back exactly what they had done before. They went back to the same complaints that they had originally. And they didn't take the lesson to heart of what they had seen of this Eish Hashem which was coming after them. And at this point, after they were complaining about the butter, now they're about the meat, now they're elaborating it anymore, and now Moshe can't deal with it anymore. Now Moshe says, Lama Hariyosa Ladekla Vlama Lamatazichim Bainekha Lasumas Koma Sahama Zalai. Why did you give me this responsibility? Why did you give me this job? Why did you put me in charge? I have to be the one to take care of these people. So what was it? Why did Moshe suddenly get so upset? Why now, more than any other time that B'nai Yisrael sinned, did Moshe Rabbeinu not want to have anything to do with Bnei Yisrael anymore. So the Rav Zichron Levracha explained as follows. He said that Moshe Rabbeinu saw his role as being the teacher of Klal Yisrael. He was the one who accepted the Torah. He was the one who was on Har Sinai and took the Torah. Now was the one that was teaching the Torah to Bnei Yisrael. But until this point, he hadn't been the one who was teaching Bnei Yisrael their midos, who was teaching Bnei Yisrael how to act beyond the specific letter of the law, what the Torah had said. At this point, when Moshe Rabbeinu saw that they were looking for something, they were looking to rebel. It wasn't against a specific commandment, it wasn't that they weren't listening to something specifically that said in the Torah, but basically they were upset with their situation. They were kofar in the tov, in the goodness of Hashem. There was no hakaras hatov, they weren't recognizing the chesed of Hashem. There was a lack in the midos of Bnei Yisrael. It was very different than any avera in the past, where they had succumbed to a certain Yetzer Hara. They had made a mistake when it came to the Chetah Egel, and they were tripped up, and they worshipped the Egel, whatever exactly that sin was. But here, where it came from within them, when it was something which they aroused in themselves, it was a very different type of Avera. And now Moshe realized that part of his responsibility was not simply to be the Rav who taught Halacha, who gave over the mitzvot of the Torah, but he had to take on the role of basically what a parent does. And that's why here is where he says, this wasn't what I bargained for, this wasn't what it was until now. Hanochi harisi is kol ha'amazem, hanochi ilatio, did I give birth to them, that I have the responsibility of the altitos Torah simecha, that there's the Torah which is attributed usually to the mother, which is the giving over of the midos and teaching the person how to act, the way the person is supposed to be. That wasn't what it's been in the past. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu responded very differently here. This isn't what my job has been, and this isn't what I've done until now. But now Moshe Rabbeinu realized that this is what his responsibility was. Now part of what he had to do was to teach Klal Yisrael not just Torah, but to teach them how to act. And this basically became a full-time responsibility of Moshe Rabbeinu, and perhaps this is even what led to the end of the parasha, when Moshe Rabbeinu basically had to separate himself from his wife, separate himself from his family, because he was under the magnifying glass. The Chazal tell us that watching a Talmid Chacham, the way the Talmid Chacham acts, is the best way of learning the proper midos, of learning the appropriate way to act. He was at a point now where he had to be caring for them the way that a mother cares for the new infant. That's their only responsibility. That's the role that Moshe Rabbeinu now realized was part of his job as leader of Klal Yisrael.
Well, what was Bnei Yisrael rebelling against? What were they rebelling for?
Why? Well, what was the impetus on the side of Bnei Yisrael? Excellent. I assume the Rav addressed that somewhere. He did not address that here. We're going to try to elaborate and try to explain that. From Moshe Rabbeinu's standpoint, I think we have a little bit more of an explanation now of why Moshe Rabbeinu viewed this event differently than the other Chatzam in the past. But again, why Bnei Yisrael acted in such a way, what suddenly snapped in Bnei Yisrael, that at least this explanation, the way I saw it quoted from the Rav, does not explain. I think I remember somebody once telling me the famous Bahalosa shir that the Rav gave. It could be he discusses that there as well. I didn't have a chance to listen or to look for that tape. But that's, at least from Moshe Rabbeinu's perspective, perhaps what was lacking. But again, we need to try to understand a little bit more now. Why did Bnei Yisrael basically contrive and look for reasons to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What was it that was, what did they see, what occurred, what happened that suddenly made this change in Bnei Yisrael? And hopefully, if we can understand this, then that will open up, I think, an approach to understanding this entire book of Bamidbar, at least the book of Bamidbar, this third book of Bamidbar, which begins with the Misonanim, with these complainers, and continues until Sefer Devarim. So who are these people? These were the people. This was the Klal Yisrael who saw the Makos in Eretz Yisrael, in Mitzrayim. They saw what Hashem did. They saw the Nisim that Hashem performed for them. they saw the Kriyas Yamsuf. They were the ones who, there was no food, Hashem sent them on. They had the bear of Miriam. They were surrounded by the cloud. They had an ash leading them, everything. So what went wrong? What could have changed all this? What were the people complaining about? So what did they say? So they said, Mi'af yuleinu basar, who will provide for us meat? And Zacharnu as Hadaga, and we remember the way things were in Mitzrayim. Everything was suddenly so good in Mitzrayim. The simpler reading of the Psukim, if we go back, we discussed this a little bit, I think, earlier in Sefer Shemos, the first time that the man was brought, they also complained that they wanted meat, and the Torah says that meat was provided for them. The simple pshat in the Psukim is that they even had the meat, so what were they complaining about? What was so difficult? So the Rishonim explained, perhaps there wasn't enough meat, maybe the meat stopped at some point. But again, the simple reading of the Psukim is that they had the meat, and if they didn't have the real meat, so the man was able to transform basically into anything. So what was it that they were lacking? They had the man, they might have even had the meat. So what was it that was bothering them?
It doesn't say that in the Psukim, it says that the man tasted like something specific, and it had a
So that's the Gemara comment, that there seems to be a contradiction between the Psukim here and the Psukim in Bishalach as to what the man tasted like. So I think the Gemara explains that it depends who the person was, and for Tzadikim it was one way, and for Rishonim it tasted something else. The same way here in the Psukim also, it says in the Psukim here that they had to prepare the man.
So for some people, remember we learned that right. They are much harder.
Right.
So I think you can whatever you want. And
exactly, right. We discussed this a little bit in Parsha Bishalach.
I guess because here they were complainers, so that's the word.
Oh, maybe. I haven't thought about that. Perhaps that's why the Psukim here specifically talk about it, because they were complaining. Maybe. So the whole thing seems absurd. Again, that they're trying to remember what it was like in Mitzrayim. Everything was so good in Mitzrayim that they forgot the meat, the onion, the garlic. They have them on. They have everything going for them. What was it that they were so upset about? The whole thing just seems completely absurd. So the Sfatemes explains, and others I think echo this idea, that in Pasuk Dalet when it says Safsuf Asher B'Kirbo Hisavu Ta'ava, that they had this desire. What does it mean, hisavu taava? He learns that they desired taiva. They desired desire. What does that mean, that they desired desire? What was the experience of the Dor HaMidbar like? They needed food, they were hungry, so they asked. Man was sent down. They had a shayla, something came out. So imagine the situation. So we know the question comes up. So we go to the Rav. So what does the Rav do? The Rav opens up, doesn't know the answer on the spot. They open up a Shulchan Aruch, and you can't figure out exactly how the halacha comes out from the Shulchan Aruch. So you look at the commentaries inside of the Shulchan Aruch. If that's still inconclusive, so you look at the later posting. You look at the Shilas and Tshuvos. And eventually you come out with an answer. You come out with a clear answer what the halacha is. What happened? What happened in this week's parsha? They didn't know what the halacha is. Moshe Rabbeinu was approached by the people who couldn't bring the Pesach Rishon. They were Tameh. They weren't eligible. And they said, Lama Nigara, why should we lose out? So Moshe Rabbeinu says, that's a pretty good complaint. That's logical. Maybe there should be a solution. He says, let me consult with Hashem. And he consults with Hashem, and what happens? A new mitzvah is either created or a new mitzvah is revealed, depending on how you learn in the Rishonim. This was a completely different life. Their life, everything, was coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They lived constantly in the presence with a direct line, with a direct line to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with a direct connection. And this was really what the first Sefer of Bamidbar was. Again, we said that the Sefer of Bamidbar consists of these three Sfarim, in Tov Vahibin Saharan, the two Psukim of Vahibin Saharan, and from the Misonim and on. The first Sefer of Bamidbar, when it talks about this ideal situation in the Machanos, and they're approaching going into Eretz Yisrael, and we discuss some of the other relevant halachas that might pertain to that situation. When everybody's encamped with the center being the Mishkan, the center being the Torah, that was the ideal. But what came with that? That they lived constantly with the Anan HaKavod. They lived constantly in the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam. The Bnei Yisrael were now saying, we don't want to be constantly in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We want to be normal. We want to live a regular life. We remember what it was like in Mitzrayim. Not that everything was so good in Mitzrayim, but we lived a normal life in Mitzrayim. We didn't have this direct connection with Hashem. We ate regular food. We lived a life, it was suffering, but it was through normal means. In the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us. But the life that we live, what we're remembering is eating real food, is just having our feet on the ground, being firmly planted, not living a life of malachim, of angels. And this is really what B'nai Yisrael were bothered by. And that's why Rashi says, they were kimisonanim, mivakshim alila, they were looking for an excuse, looking for a reason, heich lifrosh me'acharei hamakom, to separate themselves. Not to sever themselves from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They didn't want to remove themselves completely from Torah Mitzvot. So they wanted to create a barrier. They wanted to create some sort of separation. They didn't want to live anymore constantly under the watchful eye of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why Hashem punished them so severely. They were flaunting this in front of Hashem, as that Medrash said. They wanted Hashem to hear their complaints. They wanted Hashem to see that they were not interested in this life anymore. Right away, Hashem sends this Eish, and Hashem punishes them, trying to remind them of, there's something very special about this. Don't reject this. And what happens to them? The Eish stops. And what happens? V'hasafsuva shibikirbo hisavu ta'ava. Again, it's the same thing, vayashuvu. As the Rishon pointed out, they were now complaining about the same thing they complained about beforehand. Why? Now, this in a certain sense highlighted even more from them. You make one wrong step, v'tivar b'amish Hashem. They sin, they rebel against Hashem, and they're wiped out completely. This was for them another manifestation of the danger of living constantly in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
How long is this period that they're living like this? This time they're not, it's beyond their control. They're not working for food, they're not doing, they're just like Malachim. How long a period is this?
I think it's just a little bit over a year. I think that by the time we switch gears, we're about to go into Eretz Yisrael, I think it's about a year later. They died already at this point, or they died after the chait.
Yeah.
Right, the chait of Meraglim is the chait of Meraglim is coming up. Even if that were true, I think that would just highlight the point even more. If it wasn't the same people, even the stories they remember that there is that they've heard there is an existence of living a normal life. Even they perhaps they even saw it around them. They saw the other goyim sometimes, and that, you know, as they're attacking. This is what they saw. They saw that there is a life outside of living directly in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the mi'a plena basar. They wanted that the meat and potatoes. They wanted to be part of this world. They wanted to get their feet grounded on this world. And that's why here Moshe Rabbeinu was so frustrated. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't deal with them anymore. When it came to the Chet HaEgel, when it came to a specific Avera, and they made a mistake, Moshe Rabbeinu can daven on their behalf. But Moshe Rabbeinu was a paradigm of a person who was living a life in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He had a constant connection, being able to talk to Hashem whenever he wanted. So a rejection of this life was also a rejection of Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership. This was the only leadership that Moshe Rabbeinu knew. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that his job was, if something came up, he didn't know the answer, he didn't know what to do, we turn to Hashem, we ask Hashem, what's the halacha? We ask Hashem, what do we do? And when they said, when Moshe Rabbeinu saw that they were rejecting this entire lifestyle, the way of living in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he said, there's nothing left for me to do. He said, I can't do anything for them. This is the only life that I know. And that's why Hashem's response is Vayomer Hashem Moshe in Pasuk Tes Zayin, Esfali Shivim Mish Mizikne Yisrael Asher Yadata Kiyem Ziknei Ha'am V'Shotrav, go gather together 70 Zikanim, 70 elders, V'Lokachto Osam V'Lo Moed B'Siyasfu Shom Yimach, and they'll be there together with you. Bi'aradti V'Dibarti M'Chosham V'Aksalti Min HaRuach Asher Alecha V'Samti Aleihem, and I will come down and speak to you there. And some of the spirit which is on you, I will place onto them. Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer able to lead Bnei Yisrael on his own. Not because of a deficiency in Moshe Rabbeinu, but because Bnei Yisrael couldn't relate anymore. Once the Zakenim came along, it changed the entire lifestyle. Once the Yishuvim Zakenim are basically the first step to establishing a Sanhedrin, to establishing a Beis Din. Now, any time a question came up, the halacha needed to be decided within the framework of the Torah. There was no more new mitzvot that were going to come. There was no more consulting Hashem and discussing with Hashem, oh, maybe we should, maybe there's something that can be done in this particular case. Maybe there's something that can change. Now the entirety of the Torah was finalized. Only Moshe Rabbeinu was able to initiate and to secure those changes from the Ribono Shel Olam, and now is going to be live a life within the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu had brought down from Hashem. But again, it wasn't this direct connection. These Shivim Ish, the Sanhedrin, these 70 people, created this buffer zone, and they were now able to lead together with Bnei Yisrael. They were still tzaddikim, they were still the leaders of the generation, but they weren't Moshe Rabbeinu. They weren't people who were living constantly in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not clear. It's not clear. Even in the end, I'm not sure if I have a complete understanding whether when Hashem responds by sending the Zakenim, it's a realization that this is what Bnei Yisrael need, or if it's a punishment for Bnei Yisrael. That Bnei Yisrael, if by rejecting this lifestyle, they don't deserve it anymore. Hashem says, right. I'm not 100% sure what emerges. But with this, I think we can understand a little bit also the story of Eldad and Medad, which is a very enigmatic story. Again, Hashem tells Moshe to gather together 70 people and 70 Zakenim, and those 70 Zakenim are going to become the leaders of Klal Yisrael. And in Pasuk Chavav, it says, "Vayisharu shnei anoshim b'machaneh." There were two people remaining at the machaneh. Shem ho'achad Eldad v'shem Hasheni Medad. One Eldad, one Medad. V'tanach aleihem haruach v'hem abaksuvim v'lo yasu ha'olala v'yisnabu b'machaneh. They were saying nevuah. They were prophesying in the camp. V'yora tanar, and the nar ran to Moshe Rabbeinu. Rashi says this was Moshe's son Gershom. V'yigeid Moshe v'yomar Eldad and Medad v'yisnabim b'machaneh. And he told them Eldad and Medad were saying nevuah in the camp. Okay, it's not clear at this point if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It just seems to be reporting back what they were saying nevuah. Vayan Yehoshua ben Nun mesharis Moshe b'bechura v'yomar. So Yehoshua ben Nun responds, Adonim Moshe kelaim, destroy them. So apparently Yehoshua at least interpreted whatever they were doing as being bad. Vayomer lo Moshe, Hamikaneh Atali, are you being jealous for me? Umi yiten kolam Hashem neviim, ki yiten Hashem esrucho aleihem. It should only be that everybody should be on the level of being a Navi. What's so bad if these people were a Navi as well? So what's going on here with Eldad and Medad? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Yud Zayin gives us a little bit more of an understanding of what's happening. So Moshe Rabbeinu was told to gather together 70 people. Moshe was faced with a problem. How should he pick the 70 people? So Moshe said that the only way to be able to do this fairly is to take an equal number of people from each shevet. If I don't take an equal number from each shevet, then somebody's going to complain. Which is the problem is that there are 12 shvatim. So if I take 6 from each shevet, I'm going to end up with 72. And I'm only supposed to have 70. If I take 5 from each shevet, I'm only going to have 60, and I'm short 10. So what am I supposed to do? So it's actually seems to be a little bit of a machlokas in the Gemara. But there was basically Moshe Rabbeinu was going to do some sort of lottery to determine which people were going to become the Zakenim. There were 72 pieces of paper according to the first Deya in the Gemara, the first opinion in the Gemara. And two of them were blank, 70 said Zakenim, and Eldad and Medad ended up with the ones that were blank. And it seems here this was a rejection. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want you. So Moshe says, what can I do for you? But Reb Shimon says something else. Reb Shimon or Reb Abba Machaneh Yishtayu, they remained in the camp. B'shah Hashem Elo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, when Hashem told Moshe, Es Feli Shivim Ish, go gather together 70 people. Amru Eldad Umeidad, In Anu Ru'uyim Oso Gedula. We don't deserve this zechus of this merit of being one of these Zakenim, one of the leaders of Klal Yisrael. They were very humble people. And they said, so we're not going to go, and then by default, Moshe Rabbeinu will end up with 70 people instead of the 72. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem said, Hoel u'ma'astem atzmechem, since you lowered yourself and you weren't being haughty, Hareini Mosef Gedula Agedulaskam, I will make you even greater. Uma Gedula Hosef Lahem, so what greatness did Hashem provide for them? Shanaviyim kulam nisnabu upasku, that all the other Naviyim achieved the level of Nevuah and then it ceased. Hey nisnabu vilopasku. And their Nevuah kept flowing and continued. So it seems to be that Eldad and Medad, at least according to this opinion in the Gemara, were in fact greater than the other Zakenim. So what was Yehoshua bothered by? So Gershom seemed to have been sensitive to something running back to his father. And then Yehoshua wants to destroy them. And then Moshe has no interest in destroying them. So Rashi explains that Gershom came back. That what were they saying? Then why was Yehoshua so upset? The Nevuah that they were saying is that Moshe is going to die. V'Yehoshua machnes es Yisrael la'aretz. And Yehoshua was going to lead Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. So Yehoshua was upset whether he viewed this as some sort of rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu or just the kavod of Moshe Rabbeinu. He couldn't tolerate this. And what's Moshe Rabbeinu's response? Don't be so jealous for me. Why are you so concerned? Why are you so concerned with my honor? But perhaps, based on what we're saying, perhaps we can understand this a little bit more deeply. Rav Pinkus in his Sefer explains that Eldad and Medad, as we saw, they were on a higher level than everybody else. They were above and beyond even the others of Canaan. Eldad and Medad wanted to continue living the life of the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. Eldad and Medad wanted to continue this direct relationship with Hashem, living with this direct connection to Hashem. Eldad and Medad, what was their Nevuah? That Moshe meis, Yehoshua machnis et Yisrael la'aretz, that Moshe is going to die and Yehoshua is going to lead the people into Eretz Yisrael. He was explaining to the people, do you know why Moshe is going to die? Do you know why Yehoshua is going to be the one leading us into Eretz Yisrael? Because of what you did. Because you said you had no interest in this life of Nevuah, in this life of this direct connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when Moshe Rabbeinu hears Yehoshua upset for his kavod, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling Yehoshua, well, where were you yesterday? Where were you when these events transpired? Don't be concerned with my honor. It's something much more fundamental transpired, or something changed in the nature and the relationship between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. Yesterday, when they were mitzonanim, when the people were looking for an excuse to rebel against Hashem, when they were looking to try and create this separation, where were you to stand up and to say, no, the type of life that we live now is an ideal. Nothing could be better than living constantly in the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam. And it was this change, at this point, now, after all these events transpired, and now is going to be the life of the leadership of the Zakenim, this is where everything begins to fall apart for Klal Yisrael. That's this third Chumash within Sefer Bamidbar, beginning with the Mitzonanim. Once Bnei Yisrael no longer had this interest in this close relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then Parsha after Parsha, it's the Meraglim, it's Korah, dealing with Bilam, then the Chet with the Benos Midian, everything that happens now, everything was on the decline because everything changed right now. The nature of Klal Yisrael changed, and now they became susceptible to all these averus that their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they had prior was protecting them from. But the question that still remains is, so what suddenly snapped? What was the cause? I think putting the parsha together as a whole, I think we now understand better. But what was it that suddenly changed at this point? So perhaps you can explain as follows. Was it really all of Bnei Yisrael that were interested in this rebellion? the Perek began, Vayia Am Kimisonanim, the Am, the nation, were seeking complaints. So Rashi explains when the Torah uses the lashon of the language of Am, what does it mean? Ein Ha'am Ela Rishayim. The Am is referring to the wicked people. So we use Bnei Yisrael, or we use a different language if it's referring to Bnei Yisrael as a whole. So who began all this? The Rishayim. It was the Am. And they were the ones that were kimisonanim, Rabba Ozne Hashem. And the second time that it happens, after they didn't get the message, who was it? It was Ha'asaf Suf Asher Bekirbo. It was the rabble-rousers. They were there again. It was Rishayim who were bringing this up. It wasn't all of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael perhaps were satisfied with the life that they were living. But there were people amongst Bnei Yisrael, there were, whether it was the Erev Rav, there were people amongst Bnei Yisrael who perhaps it was after they saw what happened with Pesach Sheni. Perhaps it was Pesach Sheni that was really what snapped it for them. That when they saw that we can approach Moshe Rabbeinu can approach Hashem, and because of what we're saying, a new mitzvah will exist, a new mitzvah will be presented to Klal Yisrael, that means we have a really, really close relationship with Hashem. We're constantly living under that magnifying glass. And when it got to that point where he realized how high we reached the apex of that close relationship with Hashem, they were suddenly getting very nervous. They said, and they perhaps they would have been, if they would have come to Bnei Yisrael and they would have said, let's reject everything at this point, let's go be over to Avodah Zarah, everybody would have said, no, go away, we don't need you, what are you talking about? But that's not what they said. All they said was, remember what it was like, remember there was a way of, we can still do Torah mitzvahs, we can still be involved in Avodah Hashem, we can still do everything that Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. But why do we have to do it so closely? Let's create this buffer zone. Let's create some room between us and Hashem so that we're not constantly going to be living on the level of Malachim. Perhaps it was to try and put some personal initiative. They felt that they were all, you know, doing the same thing as robots. I'm not sure exactly which point it was, but there was something about the realization that they were living so close to Hashem that got the Rishayim, everybody else was happy, everybody else was satisfied with the life that they were living. But when the Am came back and they said, oh, do you remember what it was like? We can live a regular life. They were able to get people with that. That much they were able to tell people, you're still going to keep Torah mitzvot, you're still going to be close to Hashem. But do it with a little bit of room. We don't need the life of Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't need that direct connection. It can be a little further removed. And it was the Am at first, and then after that didn't work, perhaps the people even calmed down again. It was the Asaf Sof, the rabble-rousers, even you know, bigger troublemakers than just the Am. They were the ones who were able to rile up the people. They were the ones who were able to get the people together. And at that point, everybody was able to join in, and everybody was able to... Everybody had this similar complaint, and it ended up changing really the trajectory of the entire destiny of Klal Yisrael. We were at the point before Vayhi ben So Ha'aron, Hashem was moving us quickly through the Midbar, a 3 days period of traveling, Hashem condensed into one day because He wanted to bring us into Eretz Yisrael already. Chazal tell us that had we been brought into Eretz Yisrael under the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu, it would have lasted forever. We never would have had any of this. Something about all these things converging at this moment got the people who were sensitive, who were too sensitive to this, it something snapped in them. And at that point, they were able to get together the people and just say, we're still going to be from Jews, we're still going to be good, but why do we need this close relationship with Hashem? And that set off this entire flurry of events. It was the complaints, it was Moshe Rabbeinu basically seeing that as a rejection of his leadership, and Hashem having to create a new form of leadership, a new type of leadership for Klal Yisrael, which would involve the Zakenim. It would involve people as an intermediary, again, who wouldn't be able to interact directly with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but would have to interact at a distance.
Just want to ask you about Pesach Sheni. Because they went after the new mitzvah completely, they felt much closer.
I think they didn't feel closer, but I think they realized how close they were, and it scared them. They realized that they had the power, they had the ability to be... So it's like the machlokas and the mafarshim, whether the mitzvah was only made because of them, or they had the zechus to be the ones that the mitzvah was revealed on their behalf. But either way, the fact that this parsha in the Torah was written at this point because of what they said, that was something overwhelming. that was something which really hit home, that they have this close relationship, and that close relationship isn't something which is safe. And perhaps even after they saw the Eish Hashem going through the Machna, they were even more scared. They realized, you know, we need some space. We need to be able to do the mitzvot the way the mitzvot are presented in the Torah. It doesn't say anything about having to live with Anani HaKavod. It doesn't say anything about having to live a life where man is going to come down and we're going to eat from Hashem's hand, kivyachol. We can live life at a distance. We can do things and we can fulfill all the mitzvot without being under this scrutiny with this direct connection. And it emerges that for us it becomes almost the flip side. That we live with a challenge of trying to open ourselves up to at least let something in. We're so many generations removed, and this transformation was so great that the direct connection was severed to the point where, you know, we hear things and we're learning and we're trying to improve, but opening up what Chazal referred to as that Pesach Shel Machat, that little hole just to let something inside of us, that already is a tremendous avodah. That already is a tremendous effort on our part. So through this series of events, the entire relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically did a complete reverse. And we ended up going from a life being so close to Hashem, where everything was direct, to a life where we're, again, in terms of the Torah mitzvot, that was never in the discussion. They were willing to do the Torah mitzvot the entire time. But the entire discussion really has to do with this relationship with Hashem. And because of those events that took place, and the Chet HaMeragim which follows, and all the other Averos that follow, we're left trying to, you know, still pick up the pieces and trying to do our part to let HaKadosh Baruch Hu in as much as possible.
I almost feel like the only reason that you want to remove yourself from constant scrutiny is because you don't have to do things perfectly. If you're doing Torah mitzvot and you want to continue them perfectly, why do you care if Hashem is close? Meaning that you would appreciate the close connection. The only reason you want to separate yourself is that you don't...
Part of it might be that you know, living that life of... You know, almost right, a perfection basically puts everybody on the same plane, and goes back to Parshas Bamidbar a little bit. It removes the individual aspect and what each person can bring to it. Perhaps it was that they were feeling. I'm not sure, but perhaps they wanted to live a life where they could each have their own unique contributions, and they didn't want to all be on the same plane. In terms of basic. Would it have been different?
Yeah.
Chazal tells us it would have been different.
No, exactly. So this was a temporary situation in the Midbar in terms of Mun and all, you know.
Oh. I don't know exactly what would have happened in terms of the Mun. Our existence would have been something more similar to what happens in the Midbar, it seems to be, from Chazal. That if Moshe Rabbeinu would have brought us into Eretz Yisrael, it would have been, we never would have been thrown out there, never would have been a Golos.
Right.
Somehow our existence...
We would have to work the land, we would have...
Okay.
Right.
But in terms of a certain... It certainly would have cemented our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu more, to the point where we would never have had any goals.
We would have had to have more views. Moshe Rabbeinu would have thrown in numbers. Things would have...
Perhaps. It's hard to know. Again, if everybody would have been on that level, and then maybe Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership would have been enough.
They didn't have foresight, though. They didn't have foresight. They were all functioning.
That's part of it. Perhaps at least that's the idea. Again, maybe some fine tuning can be done on some of the points in elaboration.
They wanted to throw off their sexual prohibitions,
but God
is the fleshly desire.
Right. So Rashi quotes that from Chazal later on.
Down to basic morality again.
Sorry. Right. Chazal did seem to say that by when they were crying, when Bnei Yisrael were crying, Vativku Lefanav. I think there Rashi quotes that it was because of the arayos that were forbidden to them. which again, on a certain level, is certainly true, but in terms of providing a general framework for how these parshas and how this transition, how from this point and on, it seems to be that everything changed for Kal Yisrael, it's hard to see where exactly that comes from. On a certain level, that was certainly, you know, in the Shivim Panim HaTorah, that's part of it as well. I was trying to at least see is perhaps what changed in Bnei Yisrael and how we can view all the events from the Misonanim and on as hopefully a more cohesive unit.
This is how Hashem waited to all the Chatanim to occur to realize it's not the generation. Why not realize it's not the generation right away?
Right.
Continue on.
I guess in a general Bechira question in terms of...
With the next generation.
Right.